Even now, after all these years, when I hear the beginning of the Luke 2 story, every so often I hear my father reading it in King James Version. It's a fine, fine memory. So I was thinking of the texts this Sunday. Here we are in the first Sunday after Christmas Day, and we kind of swiped the texts from Christmas Day because, well, weren't there, but it still fits. And I was thinking about the Christmas season overall, and I came up with this sermon title that I'm quite pleased with, simple as it seems, The Gift of Christmas. And I'm pleased with it because there's several different directions we can go. And the most obvious one, and the one that we sometimes spend most of our time with at this time of the year, is that one of the gift of Christmas is Jesus. And we could spend a lot of time talking about that experience for the angels and Mary and Joseph, and for all of those people, the various players involved. We could think back to all the various Christmas musicals we've seen and the enjoyable things we've had there. My favorite being when the young man who was playing the angel told the shepherds, "Fear not," and they all went, "Ah!" And he said, "I told you to fear not." But the gift of Jesus is, in one sense, kind of obvious, at least to us. It's not something we lose sight of. We want to remember it, of course, that Jesus was a gift to us, because, of course, a gift is something that we don't have to pay for. It's not something we earn. And that's important for us to remember, that Jesus came as a gift, not as something that we deserved or that we could pay for, but as a gift, just like good gifts are at Christmas or any other time. Now, when was the last time someone was pleased when you tried to pay them for the gift they just gave you? It's offensive to them, and it's not a gift anymore. Now it's a transaction, probably a kind of tawdry one. Jesus was a gift. But as I was thinking of that, I was thinking the gift of Christmas. Well, Christmas is a gift. The very season itself is a gift to us. Because this is this time of year where people change, at least a little bit. Not all of them, of course, but most people. For these few weeks, people are a little easier to get along with. For these few weeks, people are kinder to strangers and friends and family alike. For these few weeks, people are more generous than they might be at other times. There's something about this season. Because there's all kinds of people who dismiss the notion of Jesus as at best a historical anomaly where some fanatical followers made up stories about him. But they still give presents. They're still nicer. They still decorate. They still let people in parking lots and hold doors for people they've never met and will never meet again. Not because of what's in this book, but because the season itself has permeated our culture. It's permeated our culture to such an extent that some of my Muslim friends celebrate Christmas. I mean, they celebrate Christmas the way we do. They give gifts to each other and have parties at Christmas because it's a great time to be with other people because we're nicer. There's something about Christmas. In 1843, I think it was, Charles Dickens wrote a little story. He wrote a number of stories in and around Christmas. But the one he wrote in 1843... was called A Christmas Carol. It was published on December 19th and was sold out by December 24th of that year. It has been continuously in print ever since. Which is really saying something. There's lots of really great books that go in and out of favor. Brilliant writing that sort of disappears when fashions change. But this has been there ever since. I tell people who have always wanted to read Dickens, start with that one, because first of all, it's really good and it's really short. You can't say that about a lot of Dickens, but you can about that one, the short part. But why is it still there? Because there's something about the story. And there's something that makes the story believable. Because when we read about Scrooge encountering these ghosts and things, we sort of skip over the ghost part because most of us don't believe in ghosts. It's a convenient literary exercise or literary trick, if you will. But we find the story believable. We find it possible that the Christmas season, whether it involves ghosts or not, can change people. It could even change Scrooge from a grasping, miserly, unpleasant person into a generous one. The Christmas season and his encounter with the realities of what it holds change him. And we resonate with that story because we know people similar to that. Now, maybe we don't know an actual Scrooge clone. We don't know someone who's, you know, that awful, perhaps. But who among us doesn't know someone who tends not to be pleasant? Maybe they're not unpleasant, but they're just, you know, they're focused all the time. They just, you know, they don't deal with niceties. They don't make small talk or whatever else it might be. But at this time of the year, they might say hello to you. They might say Merry Christmas and smile. Why? Because this season does something to and for most of us. Now, there's lots of things to dislike about sort of the commercialization of Christmas. I, for one, find it abhorrent to see Christmas decorations in stores before Halloween. I think that's crazy. There are a number of Christmas songs I could go the rest of my life and never hear. There's that kind of almost sickly sentimentality at Christmas that I find hard to get a hold of. But I love the season. I love the season, not just because I get stuff. It's taken me a long time to have my sort of immediate family and such realize that I authentically don't care if I get something. I don't want something, but I don't not want things either. I'm never offended if somebody gives me a present. It's just if you don't, I'm not offended either. That's not what makes a season so wonderful. What makes a season wonderful is seeing that people, for at least some part of the year, look beyond their own immediate needs, which are significant and real, and give to people they don't even know. To give to groups that distribute food and other things to other people, at least at this time of the year. The season of Christmas is a great gift to us as individuals and as a culture because it moves us beyond and out of ourselves as a group. There are very few workplaces that get together in April to raise money for the food bank. Some do, and that's wonderful, but most don't. Many do in December. Many do lots of these things. We have gift exchanges at work. People you barely know, some places, why? Because there's something about the season. There's something about the season that transcends people's indifference to the gospel, that transcends people's aggressive disbelief in things of faith. And I'm grateful for it. But there's another gift of Christmas. Because Christmas changed everything. Everything. Before the coming of Jesus, with all of the mystery that that entails, before God chose to inhabit a human form, fully human and fully God at the same time, in a mixture we'll never fully understand, before that, there was this feeling that the way to God was through following a long and involved set of regulations with sacrifices and priests and all of these things. And if you didn't do them exactly right, it wasn't going to work. But if you did them exactly right, it had to work. It says some things about God and us that I'm not sure are true. Okay, I'm certain they're not true. And Jesus came. And in our reading in Titus, in this translation, the New International Version, it says, "But when the kindness and love of God our Savior appeared, he saved us, not because of righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy." One of the commentators I read has his facility with Greek, the one that I've lost, for better or worse. And he occasionally does literal translations that are very similar to what we see. But there's a literal translation of this part of Titus. It says, "Not from works on the basis of righteousness that we did, but on the basis of his mercy, he saved us." It changed everything. Because when Jesus came, he said, there is no way you can put on sufficient righteousness from what you do. And we all knew that already. Because we, and by we I mean human beings, had been trying that Old Testament system for a long time. For a long time. And it didn't work. People had to keep coming back over and over again to do the sacrifices again, and they were never sure if they'd got them exactly right. And if they were sure they'd got them exactly right, they then knew that they had accomplished everything that needed for their salvation. But it didn't work that way. It didn't work that way then, which was perhaps unclear. It works the way it is now, and it's perfectly clear. We are in no way responsible for our salvation. None. There's nothing we can do that will force God to save us, which is a good thing, because most of us wouldn't try anyway. And if that's where it ended, that would be a terrible story. But it doesn't end there. Salvation is not accomplished by righteousness of ours at all, but by mercy. Mercy. Mercy is an extraordinary thing. It's a word we don't encounter very much. But what does it mean? Mercy is when you don't get what you deserve. Mercy is what you don't get what you deserve. There have been many times in my life, I haven't gotten what I deserved. Some of them were significant, where people had an opportunity to do to me or give to me what I deserved, which would have had very significant and unpleasant effects. And they chose not to. They extended mercy. And you might think, if you don't think about it carefully, you might think, well, that's going to just suggest that you now have the license to do whatever you want. You just think, well, I did it last time, I got away with it, I'll do it again. Perhaps some people think of it that way. But what happened with me, and as I've talked to other people, what happens to most of us, is that the extension of mercy doesn't highlight what we got away with. It highlights what we didn't get. The consequences that we deserved that weren't put on us. It doesn't always work, of course, because human beings are what they are, but frequently, the extension of mercy changes people in ways that punishment never will. Because mercy says that you matter more than what you did. And not everybody can do that, and not everybody receives that, but when you do, it changes how you think about what you did. It doesn't make it less bad, it makes it more significant. And some of those lessons of mercy have stayed with me all of my life. And I think they always will. When we read in Titus, when we read that we are now saved through mercy, not through the righteousness that we somehow grit our teeth and create in ourselves, it doesn't make me feel that I can get away with anything. It makes me feel blessed. It makes me feel privileged. It's astonishing to me that God will save me by mercy when he knows what I've done. I know what I've done. I don't like lots of what I've done. God is willing to save me anyway through mercy. And it's more than that. It's not just that it's not accomplished through our righteousness, but through God's mercy. It reminds us that salvation is not accomplished by human beings at all, but by God alone. It's God alone who saves us. There is nothing we can do to save ourselves. That's very frustrating for us, particularly in our culture where we fix a lot of our own problems, where we frequently think that we can do whatever it is that needs to be done, whatever that might be. It reminds us that we need a bit of humility when it comes to this kind of thing, because it's God who saves us. Not because of what we've done, but because of what Jesus did. And it all began in this season, the one that we celebrate, It all began when Jesus said, there's only one way to do this, and I'm going to do it. Not because I'm being forced to, but because I love them. Is it any surprise that that part of this season is what permeates everything? Oh, there are lots of people who give gifts because they're keeping track. These are the people who know exactly how many gifts they got from each person they got gifts from and how much they were, and they'll make sure next year to equal that or maybe exceed it by a little bit. But those are the minority. Most of us give gifts to people we love because we love them, not because of what they gave us or what they did for us even, just because they are. That's the gift of Christmas. The gift of Christmas is Jesus. The gift of Christmas is the season itself. And the gift of Christmas is this deep and ultimate understanding that it is God who saves us, not because of what we do, but because He loves us. Amen.